morning and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 70th edition of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan. And this show is brought to you by AllFreeCrochet.com, your source for great crochet patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, get on over to AllFreeCrochet.com to get in on the fun. I want to welcome the new listeners today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. Okay, my guest today is a very big name in the crochet world. She is a very talented crochet designer that has been published in numerous crochet magazines and has written two books, Go Crochet Afghan Designs Workbook, published in 2011, and recently released Learn Burgess Lace. Now, she is an instructor for Annie's online classes and is the editor of Crochet Magazine. I'm speaking of my friend, the very delightful Ellen Gormley. Ellen joins us this morning from North Bend, Ohio. Good morning, Ellen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Benjamin. Nice to be with you on this podcast.
Oh, it's great to have you on, and I really do appreciate your patience with me. I had to postpone. I was just a little under the weather, and Ellen was gracious enough to reschedule me, and she's a pretty busy gal, which we're going to talk about here pretty soon, so I really do appreciate your patience.
Oh, no problem. Flexibility is the name of the game, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I think you probably learned that as being a designer and now an editor. And again, we'll talk more about that. It's great to have you on the show. You're one of those very positive people that I just love to hear from and talk to. Of course, you and I have known each other for a couple of years now. We haven't talked a lot, but I always enjoy your company when you're around. And it's also great, again, finally, to have somebody a little more crochet-centric on the show. Fiber Hooligans, you've been very patient while it's been knitter after knitter after knitter. And we've had some great knitters. It's been great, but I really tried to make a commitment to keep the show a little more balanced when we started up with the new format. And it's been a little while since we had a real crocheter on the show. And so I'm glad to have you on the show, Ellen. Before we get started today, so North Bend, Ohio, that's outside of Cincinnati?
It is. It's west of Cincinnati, and I like to tell people that I have a view of Kentucky out my front window and a view of Indiana out my side window. So that's how far down we are in the Ohio River Valley.
Okay. You know, I think I figured that out once when I flew through Cincinnati, and I realized, I think isn't the airport actually not in the state?
That's right. It's actually in Kentucky. The Cincinnati, Ohio airport is in northern Kentucky.
That's what I thought, and I got very confused when I was folks, you know me. It doesn't take much for me to get confused, and so you know when I go to the Cincinnati airport and it's you know it's not in Ohio. I think Ellen, just for this my sake, I'm not the only one that's ever been confused by that.
Oh no, I'm sure you're not, and it's completely okay. And luckily, Indiana now is on the same daylight savings time as Ohio, because Indiana's only a few minutes away. So when we were on different daylight savings time and not, that was very confusing. So I understand the confusion with geography.
Well, and again, I'm just, you know, as you guys know, I'm not the cleverest boy in the world, but Ellen is very clever, and we're going to get to that soon. So fall has definitely fallen here. How is the weather in North Bend today?
Oh, it's beautiful today. It's 50 and dry, and you can't ask for anything better than that in the fall in Ohio.
No, you really can't. No, but see, I get the sense that no matter what the weather's like, you're always going to put an optimistic spin on it. You're always happy about things.
Well, I'm going to try, you know, because like I say to my kids, my little mantra, be grateful or be quiet. So that's just kind of the viewpoint that I try and take with life.
Well, that's a very good way of looking at it. I guess having kids does that for you if you're lucky, and it also teaches you some humility. I've learned that time and time again. I now have older children, a 20-year-old and 18-year-old, and almost to be a 14-year-old, and they're awfully clever, you know. So naturally, they're smarter than I am, and so
That's
it's.
right.
You know, not only am I not cool a lot of the time, as if I was ever cool, but oftentimes I'm finding myself wrong, more and more wrong. And
I can relate.
all right. Well, let's get right into the show today because I'm very excited to have you on the show and share you with the Fiber Hooligan audience. So you've probably heard the show before. I ask a pretty boilerplate question, and so I'll ask the same question to you. Ellen Grumley, who are you and where did you come from?
I'm a little bit of everything. I'm just a Midwestern girl, grew up in the city of Dayton, so city girl. And I've always been creative, but always wanted to try and find a way to be creative in life and still kind of get through day to day. So I was a photography major in college, and then I went and got a master's in counseling. And it wasn't until the kids came along that I could come full circle to being creative again. And that's when the crochet really flourished, because I quit my daytime job and I was able to be creative with yarn while I was raising the kids. And I finally came home to my creative self at that point. So I'd been creative my whole life, but it wasn't until the crochet came into my day-to-day life that I found where I was supposed to be.
Well, that's a very good answer. So, and I love it when when people put it, you know, kind of where they're from and where they came to, because it allows me to go back and say, okay, let's pull this piece out of here. And so I'm going to do the same thing for you. This was something that, you know, how many people have we talked to? Nobody starts out in life thinking that they're going to get into the fiber arts world. And so you had another gig before this. You know,
Right.
this what did you go to college to do, and what did you end up doing out of college?
Yeah, believe it or not, I started college as a photography major, but since I was doing really well with psychology, I thought I would try and do some collaboration between the two things, and I was going to go into art therapy, and I decided I needed a master's in counseling so that I could use art in my counseling work. And over time, I actually used yarn and crochet often with my therapy clients, and we had a group for people who were suffering from depression, and they brought yarn and we would craft and crochet. But when the kids came along, we decided that I would stay home. That was our plan. And the crochet kept going. And so I put my practice, my counseling practice aside, and instead began the full-time work of raising children. And the yarn kept me company and kept me sane during the time of struggle and getting up in the middle of the night and, you know, all the hard work of raising little ones. And my crochet career kind of developed as my children did. So I sold my very first pattern when our now 11-year-old was one. And it took some time, but over the years, I've been able to create for myself, I'm excited to say, a career that I never knew existed back when I was in college.
Well, and so your career is really interesting. I mean, as I understand this story, and please correct me if I'm wrong, there you were, raising kids, stay-at-home mom, which, you know, again, that's a hard job, and it's a lonely job. I mean, it's a job that's, you know, it's not, that sometimes not a lot of expression of creativity. It's never ending. But at some point, you thought to yourself, okay, I have some talent at this, or at least I have some love for this. I wonder if this can be a way that I can bring some money into the house, which is a very familiar theme.
Right. Yeah, there was actually a pivotal moment when I was reading to the kids and thought I should write children's books because it can't be that difficult, right? In my naivete, I was thinking, how hard can it be? It can be very hard. But I started researching how to write a query letter to a publisher, who publishers were, how the whole process worked with an agent. And I started researching writing children's books. And as I was researching, a pivotal line was in one of the textbooks that said, you should be writing every day. And the light bulb went off in my brain that said, Ellen, you don't write every day. You crochet every day. That's what you should be doing. So then I went to my bookshelf with all my crochet books and started looking at those publishers and writing query letters and submission proposals to them. And it was at that moment that I realized, you know, it was a good exercise to research writing children's stories, but that's not where my talent is. Other wonderful, talented people do that, and it's a very hard task. And I should do what I'm good at, even if it's, you know, it's yarn, and some people maybe don't feel like it's contributing to the society as a whole. It's a gift that I was given, so I'm going to be grateful and cherish it and try and thrive. And so I pursued a crochet career.
Well, and we're all glad you did. You're a very talented and gracious fiber artist, and I think that most of our Fiber Hooligan listeners would say, no, doing stuff with yarn does contribute to the general welfare of the world. I think the people listening to us would definitely agree that, you know, yeah, it adds substance to the universe. So one of the things I know about you was how tenacious you were. I mean, you started on this thing, but you didn't enjoy just out-of-the-box success. I mean, this was something you had to work at a good long time, and you had to develop kind of some thick skin while, you know, you weren't just bouncing out of the box as far as the hot new designer after 2 weeks of designing.
No, I didn't skyrocket, as they say. You know, and many designers do. They show up at their first, you know, professional event, and they leave, you know, with contracts. And what happened was, I started writing to the publishers who were on my bookshelf of all my favorite crochet titles and asking them, you know, how can I submit to you? I'd like to show you my ideas. Well, I was thrilled when the very first blanket proposal that I sent out to a major publisher was accepted on the very first try. I was over the moon, and I thought, wow, I can do this. But reality set in, because it was a year later and almost 100 more proposals to different companies, to a wide variety of companies at that point, before I received my second acceptance. So it was a year of sending out proposal after proposal, sketching lots of ideas, you know, probably 40 or 50 ideas, and sending them off to various publishers and yarn companies. And it wasn't for a whole 12 months or so before acceptance number two came. And it got to be almost a running joke, because every time I received a rejection letter or email, I printed it out and put it in a stack. And I was seeing the stack grow and grow and grow. But I thought, I'm going to crochet anyway. You know, what does it hurt to send an email or send a $5 postage packet to a publisher? I might as well keep trying, because it's not too painful to keep trying. And so I'm grateful that I was able to hang in there.
Well, I think we're all grateful that you hung in there, but the truth of the matter is, okay, maybe logistically it doesn't hurt, but getting rejection after rejection, no, it does take a toll. It does, because the stuff is personal, and you're trying to make it inroads, and you look at your stuff and you look at other people's stuff and say, you know, my stuff is good. In fact, I'm sure you had that moment where you looked at something that you saw published and said, my stuff is better than that. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that, Ellen. But the nice thing about it is that second acceptance that happened about a year later was not for one pattern.
No, it was very exciting. I remember vividly, I'd sent out a large package of submissions, maybe 10 or so, to Red Heart and Kathleen Sams at the time. And it had been a while since I had heard anything, and I was being patient and, you know, at this point, not really having my hopes up, because I thought, I'll just keep trying. You know, I kind of had already written it off as another rejection. And I was in my kitchen, and she called my cell phone. And, you know, even back then, everything was done by email. Nobody ever called your phone. You know, if somebody calls your phone, it's like an emergency. So it was so funny. I answered the phone, and it's Kathleen Sams, and she says to me the magic words that changed my career. And she said, "We want them all." You know, she said, "Sorry, it's taken me long to get back to you. We were processing." And that's often what it is when there's a rejection or a long wait. You know, the person is just trying to find the best fit for their publication or their line of patterns. And she said, "We want them all. We love them all and we want them all." And I just remember that wonderful feeling of, yes, finally somebody sees what I'm trying to do and validating that all the hard work from the previous year of knocking on doors, it wasn't all a waste of time, but it was building to this moment. So that I had to have a while of rejection so that I could have this moment of awesomeness, you know, when she accepted all of them. And so that was really the moment when my career opened up for real, when I thought it had opened up earlier, but it wasn't ready yet. So the timing finally clicked.
Well, that's great. And I'm sure that gave you the confidence as well as, you know, a little more credibility, especially once those were published. Now, you come to this very much the way that a lot of designers come to this, which is you're sitting out in, and again, not in the middle of nowhere, but still isolated from the industry mm-hmm. proper. You see a certain amount of what you see, you know, whether it's social media, Ravelry, emails, magazines. You see what you see. But there was kind of a pivotal moment for you where you got, and it happens with designers, it's a pivotal moment where you get in front of the end consumer, your peeps. And I'm talking mm-hmm. about your very first CGOA conference. Can right. you tell us about that experience?
Right. It was very exciting. Kathleen Sams had, you know, said, "Hey, Ellen, get involved with Crypto Guild of America, CGOA." And I signed up with a mentor. Tammy Hildebrand was assigned to me. She was already an established professional. And she said, "Hey, get yourself to a show where you can meet consumers, people who, you know, use crochet patterns and read books." And also the Saturday morning of that show every year is a meet and greet with editors of magazines and yarn design buyers from yarn companies. So I went to King of Prussia, Pennsylvania for that year's Crochet Guild of America Knit and Crochet Show. And I stood in line with all the other aspiring designers to meet Carol Alexander, who was then the editor of Crochet Magazine. And that became a pivotal moment for me because it was meeting her and getting a relationship established in the crochet field industry, where I was meeting key people and getting to know them and letting them get to know me. That was the germ of, you know, the root of everything that grew from then on. So I met Carol, and that was a wonderful experience. She's a very lovely, gracious lady, and she's my boss now. So years later, here I am as the editor of Crochet Magazine, and Carol Alexander is now my executive editor and mentor and friend, of course. And it's just really exciting to think that relationship started years ago and built over time until I was where I needed to be to take the next step.
Well, it is interesting. And of all the places for it to start, King of Prussia. Now, you and I have spoken about this because Stitches East used to be in King of Prussia. And right. Folks, if you haven't heard me talk about this, this is an odd little convention center and hotel, very odd with strange things. Go back and listen to some previous episodes. But, you know, you never think that something's going to happen in King of Prussia. And nothing against King of Prussia. The little the town is quite beautiful, but the convention center and the hotel, that's a little strange. I remember for years we had our show downstairs and the gun show was upstairs, which is a great mix, a fun mix. Of our people and other people, and I'm not casting any aspersions, folks. I'm just saying it's a strange little place. Do you remember thinking it was a little odd when you went there?
I just remember it was a long car ride from the from the airport to the convention center and being a little queasy and green when I got out of the car. And I had never heard of King of Prussia. I just hadn't heard of that town before I visited. So, and when as soon as I got out of the car and I'm in my traveling clothes, jeans, and a t-shirt or something, I'd never been to a show before. And I was immediately faced with people I wanted to meet. And I was embarrassed that I wasn't like all put together nicely to present myself. And it was such just a surreal moment all the way around.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had a great first experience out in the world. Consumer shows are a lot of fun, and usually there's a lot of enthusiasm. They're very different than a wholesale show like a TNNA. And so let's talk about your first TNNA, because one of the fun things when you and I were talking earlier in the pre-interview is you had an experience very much like a lot of designers that I have met when they go to their first TNNA. You don't always know what's going on. It's an expensive mm-hmm. show. It's very different than a consumer show. And the mandate there, of course, we've talked about this before on the show, is that suppliers and wholesalers and publishers are there to sell to shops. But designers come hoping to sell
right
to those people, but you're not the priority.
No.
At a consumer show, the designer is the star, always the star. The designer is always the star. At the TNNA shows, yes, you're still stars, but not necessarily always the priority. And that must have been an interesting time for you. I mean, can you tell us about your experience and how you took it and how you dealt with it?
Sure. The first show, first of all, you have to become a member of TNNA, and there's a process of, you know, getting recommendations and making sure you're actually working hard in your field before you even can go. So I was thrilled to be accepted as a member and to go to TNNA. And I, after my show and talking with other people, it's not uncommon for the first TNNA for a designer to end up in tears at some point or other during the show. And the truth is that it's very hard. It's almost like your first show is very hard, I think, in my experience. It's almost like a job interview where you're on from the moment you arrive to the moment you leave. So you pass someone in the hall, you have to have your game face, you have to be ready to smile and hear a name and try and put it in your memory. You have to be on. You walk through the hotel bar on the way to dinner and, you know, you see people and you don't know that other people are seeing you. It's almost like you need to just be aware of your surroundings all the time. And then the wonderful show floor is so amazing with the vendors from all over the country and sometimes all over the world, and you're seeing fantastic products. And you can't really jump in there as a designer. You kind of have to hold back and allow the businesses to do their business that they need to do to stay solvent. They need to sell yarn to retailers. So as designers, we kind of stay a little bit back and be humble and, you know, when you have a moment, can I please? You know, you wait till there's a pause and you have to be very gentle and not too pushy. But at the same time, you want to be seen and have people know who you are. So it's a real careful balance between being assertive and confident, but yet also being humble to know that you are their second priority. Their first priority, the vendor's first priority, is to sell yarn. So when they have time in between their meetings, is a good time to try and say hello and, you know, tell them about yourself. And then if a retailer comes up to the booth, you quickly excuse yourself and your time is up. So it's, but those contacts stay with you. So it's great to grab business cards and put faces to names and to thank those vendors for supporting your designs if they've done that over the past year, and create and continue the relationships that will build your career through time. So even if you get a moment or two with a vendor or a yarn company or an executive, then that's still useful.
Of course it is. And the more you go, the more you know people, and it gets easier for everybody, it gets
it does.
Easier because it is a small enough industry that eventually you will know everybody. I mean, you don't have to go very long to meet everybody. And eventually, you know, you find the time. And I know you did enjoy a bit of success in that first show of yours.
Yeah, it was very exciting. And luckily, I was able to use thank yous as my opening conversation with so many yarn companies. And that is awesome to be able to start a conversation with a thank you. I mean, how can they turn that down? So to be able to go to a yarn company and say, thank you for offering me the yarn support so that I could do, you know, X project in Y magazine, you know, and so that's a great way to start a conversation with the vendor. And it's genuine. You know, you appreciate the yarn support that the yarn companies give so that you can do what you do. And yes, it definitely gets easier. And now it almost feels like kind of a family when we go to TNNA, because I get to see people I haven't seen for a year and people I care about and hear what's new in their lives and their careers and talk about where the industry is heading and see new designers who I haven't met yet. So it becomes really an exciting event. That first one's a little hard, but the learning curve is low and you can get to a good spot, I think, rather quickly.
I agree. And, you know, of course, I think the first time we met was at TNNA a couple of years ago. And I think I was brazen and I came up to you and introduced myself because I was a big fan. And the reason I was such a big fan is I had seen you on TV. And I want to talk about that in a minute. And I just thought you were wonderful.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about the evolution of your career and how you ended up on television?
Sure. It was at TNNA where I met Candy Jensen.
Oh, wonderful
Candy
lady.
Candy Jensen, yes. So I knew her because, of course, she had wonderful books in both knit and crochet. And she had even written a book called Knitting Loves Crochet, where the two disciplines work together. And I was such a fan. And so when I met her, I was just starstruck. And I happened to be wearing a crochet sweater that I had designed and made, and she commented that she liked it. And it was just a wonderful moment that I will never forget. And over time, over a couple of visits at TNNA through a few years after that, every time I saw her, we would talk a little bit more. And at one point, I had my first book, Go Crochet Afghan Design Workbook, out, and she invited me to come and be a guest on the TV show. So I drove up to Detroit to do an interview on camera, and she used me as a guest spot. And now that I look back on it, I feel like it was almost like a screen test. You know, it was almost like an on-camera screen test, although I'm sure that wasn't in her mind at the time because her staff was full. But a few years after that, you know, I got the call that there was an opening for a regular cast member, you know, a crochet expert position had come open on the show, and did I want it? I'm like, of course I want it. That's so silly. So I'm delighted now that season 5, is it? That's going to be starting airing in January on PBS stations, and I'm on it, and it's so exciting, and Jenny King and a few other wonderful designers are on it, and I think it's just going to be fun. And every time I go, it's to the filming. We film twice a year. It's just a fun, chaotic, frenzied, get as much work done in the short amount of time kind of event. It's a whirlwind, and then it's over before you know it. And then it's months later when we see the edited versions on TV that it all comes together, and we realize how awesome it is to put it all together and have this piece of media for consumers to watch.
Well, it is, and you're very good. You're very good.
Thank you.
I mean, again, I was so impressed with you that I walked right up and introduced myself, and you were so sweet. You know, hi. I don't think you know who the heck I was, which is fine.
I often have that confused look on my face when I'm meeting people at TNNA. I get overloaded, you know, like I can only interact with so many people at a time, and then I start to get a little shy. So it may have been one of those unfortunate moments where I had kind of gotten to my level of interaction for the day. So I apologize if I was a little confused.
No, not at all. And it makes total sense why you didn't. I mean, for folks that need to understand a little bit, there is, I wouldn't say a schism, but there are slightly different, hemispheres or orbits of people that are in crochet or are in knitting, just slightly. And so that Ellen knows everybody at, say, Coates or most of the yarn companies is very relevant, but she wouldn't necessarily know somebody from a knitting magazine or a knitting publishing company. That wouldn't necessarily be the case. And back then, we were not engaging in crochet at stitches at the level we do now either. So that she wouldn't know me is very, very typical. We would have eventually met each other, I promise, folks. But I was such, I guess I was being a fanboy that day, and I hope you don't mind.
Oh, no, not at all. No, meeting people is so much fun, and it's fun to add more friends in the industry. So, no, it's wonderful. I love it when people come up and introduce themselves to me, when I see people at shows.
One of the things that you said earlier about being impressed with Candy's book, both knitting and crochet, that's something I wanted to talk to you about. We're going to take a little side breath into this because this is something that I think is really kind of important. Just like you, we kind of tend to concentrate on in one niche, which is knitting for magazines and our books. But it doesn't mean we don't love crochet, and it doesn't mean we don't love weaving. I happen to know that you're a knitter. I do. I happen to know that you're a knitter, and I happen to know that you're fascinated by all crafts that use yarn, and that you, like me, tend to reject the premise that you have to be one or another.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, really, when I love all of it. I started out really doing cross stitch and embroidery as a child, and now often when I complete a big crochet project or venture or book, I often relax with garter stitch or stockinette to really recharge my batteries. I love knitting. It has a huge value in the fiber world. But I have to admit, crochet is my first love. That's what I've done the longest. That's the language that I understand most fluently, if it were. Knitting is a little bit of a different language. I'm still learning that language. It doesn't come as easily to me as crochet does. But there's room for all of us. And you can knit and crochet with any yarn out there. And so it always makes me a little sad, but a little amused too, when people say, "Can you crochet with this yarn?" Absolutely. You can crochet with any yarn that's on the market that you can knit with. And so it's exciting when crocheters can embrace some of the exciting, exotic, interesting, sustainable, soft, wonderful fibers that are in the community, in addition to the old favorites that we've used for years.
And I think this is such a great answer. I think I told you this story before when Drew Imborski, the crochet dude, has his own line, and he was at a Stitches Midwest a couple of years ago with his own line, and somebody walked into his booth and picked up a skein of Decades, I think it was, and said, "Can you knit with this?" And Drew, being the, somewhat practical joker, he says, "Oh no, that's just for crochet. You're not going to knit with that, are you?" And of course, and then he was a good guy. He turned around and said, "Don't. I'm just kidding. Of course you can,
Teasing with you. Yes.
yes,
Yes,
right."
absolutely. I had the thrill of using his yarns in one of my recent books, the Go Crochet Skill Builder, 30 crochet in a day projects. And so that Decades yarn is really lovely, and I appreciate his support in that book.
So while we're on the subject, let's talk about your books. Let's talk about the evolution of and the process that you go through when you write your books.
Okay. I had kind of a bold move. I don't usually think of myself as being too terribly bold, but somewhere along the line, I realized that F&W Publishing is here in my town. It's here in Cincinnati. And a friend of a friend works there. And I met him at a party, and I just said, "Who's the acquisitions editor there?" And he gave me her name, and I decided to be bold, and I just wrote her an email and said the funniest thing. I just said, "Here I am. This is what I do. Here's links to my blog," because I had a blog for a while. "Here's a link to my Ravelry page. I don't have a proposal for you. but I will. And I said, you know, 4 months from now on such and such a date, I'm going to send you a book proposal for a crochet book. But if you want to contact me now to help me shape that proposal so that your needs are met too, contact me now and we'll work on it together. And I was just floored. I just threw that out there as a fluke thinking, you know, we'll see. If she wants to work on it together, wonderful. But if she doesn't, I'll put a proposal together and send it to her. And I was just really floored when she emailed back and said, no, don't write your proposal yet. Let's do it together. And so we were able to shape the Go Crochet Afghan Design Workbook toward the market that they had in mind and, you know, how they had envisioned filling a hole that they had in their holdings and, of course, incorporating my first love of blankets and afghans and motifs, which I'm crazy about. I always kind of default to those when I'm kind of stuck design-wise. They just are my bread and butter where I feel most at home. And so we were able to put the book out there, and then we eventually followed up with a second book. So it was a good match, but it was kind of funny because I didn't think of myself as being a very bold player, but it ended up being kind of a bold move that paid off well.
And the process, harder than you thought it was going to be?
Harder than I thought it would be. No, I think the writing part felt harder. You know, the writing the paragraphs and crafting the philosophy of the book. And it's actually kind of funny because I think a lot of people don't read that part anyway. They skip to the pretty pictures, which is exactly what what we do when we are shopping for books. And you see Go Crochet Skill Builder on the shelf and you see the pretty pictures. And then, you know, maybe later you might read the foreword or the philosophy behind it. But really, we're attracted to the gorgeous colors of the yarn and the beautiful fibers and the beautiful shapes. And crochet these days is so modern and fresh and versatile and dimensional that I think it really is visually attractive to people. So the writing part of the book felt more difficult than the creating or crocheting part, but all of it was wonderful and it fulfilled a bucket list item for me that I had back before when I was the yearbook editor in high school. I had always wanted my own book, so it was really fun to see my name on the cover of a book.
That's great. And I've talked about it with many authors, that moment when the book shows up is kind of a big thing.
Kind of big, I mean, it is a big thing.
I've been, as a publisher, I've had the wonderful opportunity to actually be in the room and hand over the book to some of our authors. And yes. It's emotional. It's in a very emotional time.
Right. Yeah, I insisted that my family be present with a camera when I opened my first manuscript, my first bound book. You know, I waited patiently to open the package until they came home from school and work and could be ready with a camera to capture the moment. And it was really special. And every time I write a book and it arrives, it's still a special feeling. All that hard work coming together in one tangible piece.
Well, since we're on the subject, let's give the Fiber Hooligan listeners your bibliography.
Oh, okay. Go Crochet Afghan Design Workbook was the first book with F&W. And that's also available on Kindle. And then F&W, I followed up with Go Crochet Skill Builder, 30 Crochet in a Day projects to take you from beginner to expert. So those are all projects that can be made in one day. Awesome. So much fun. Lots of techniques. Then I've written a couple booklets for Annie's Publishing, who publishes my crochet magazine, which I edit. And for them, I wrote Learn Bruce Lace, which is a variation of crochet, which is so much fun. And I wrote Marvelous Crochet Motifs, coming back to motifs, which I'm very fond of. And I co-authored one book with Shelby Alaho, which was Crocheting Clothes Kids Love.
I want to step back, if you can, to your lace book, because I happen to know that you're kind of nuts about this particular lace
Right.
technique. And it's something I didn't know about until we were talking. And so I always think to myself, well, I got a lot of knitters and some crocheters that may not have heard about this technique. Can you take us through
Right.
this?
Sure. Bruges lace, Bruges, is a crochet technique that makes a very lacy fabric. It's kind of evolved from bobbin lace out of Eastern Europe years ago, and crocheters have adapted it to make these long, winding, narrow tapes that almost look serpentine-like and will join back on itself. So it looks amazingly intricate, but it's generally all basic crochet stitches, double crochet and chains, and then maybe single crochet and half double crochet to create some height differences when you make turns and curves and windy paths. So you can make anything out of it, and it's very free form in a way because you're making this long, narrow strip of crochet fabric, and you can make it turn anytime you want. So anyway, I teach the technique in the book Learn Bruges Lace through Annie's, and I also teach it on Annie's online classes, Learn to Crochet Lace, and it includes Bruges lace, hairpin lace, and broomstick, and that's at anniescraftstore.com. But it's a fun technique. It's very addictive.
It is, and it's kind of your thing. I mean, you're really, I wouldn't say hung up, but you're definitely into this.
Oh, I've definitely been pursuing it the last few years and really exploring the potential of all the different shapes that you can make with these long winding tapes. And the rows are all really short, so it's hard to stop. You think one more row, and then the next thing you know, you've gotten, 20 more inches of work done. It's very instant gratifying.
Well, it sounds amazing, and folks, so I'm gonna encourage you, if you've never heard of this, to just go up and look at it, and we're gonna provide some links a little later on. All right, so we've been talking about Annie's, and over the years, your relationship with Annie's has gotten stronger and stronger. You've continued to work with them, and of course, you've had pieces in the magazine. But lo and behold, I look up one day, and you're the editor. My goodness, that happened awfully quickly. And so, I'm always curious, how did it come about? Was it in the works from the beginning? Can you tell us the story of how you became the editor of the Crochet magazine?
I would say that it did feel kind of sudden to me in some ways, but Carol Alexander had given me some clues. So Carol Alexander was the editor of both Crochet with the exclamation point, Crochet Magazine, and also Crochet World, both published by Annie's. And I had known her because I supplied freelance crochet designs to both magazines for a while. And it was at a CGOA one day when she said, "Have you ever thought about editing, editing a magazine?" And I knew that she had been editing both magazines, and I assumed that that would be pretty hard work. So I had emailed her previously and said, "Are there any tasks that you could farm out to me? Is there any task I can help you with as you're busy juggling two magazines?" And so she and I started talking about tasks that I could do to help out on a freelance basis. And it was sometime after that conversation that Carol Alexander told me that she was thinking about going down to one magazine herself, and would I be interested in exploring the opportunity of becoming an editor? And I wasn't really ready at the time. My kids were a little, I felt like they weren't independent enough for me to be commuting back and forth almost 3 hours to Indiana where their offices were. But we continued our conversation over time, and she invited me to come and visit, and I had started filming the online classes for Annie's, so I was visiting Annie's more and more. I had written two booklets for them. So at one point, she asked me to meet Executive Vice President of Product Michelle Fortune, and we had lunch at a TNNA, and there was a very exciting meeting, and out of that you know, a few weeks later or whatever, came the offer to become the new editor of Crochet Magazine. So that was a thrill. Carol Alexander is still the executive editor, and she's my mentor and leading the way, and she continues to edit Crochet World and the special newsstand issues of both magazines. So they've really brought me in a way that has worked really well for me and my family.
Well, okay, so that's just an amazing story, and they couldn't have picked somebody better, Ellen. You're absolutely fantastic, and you have a solid reputation of meeting deadlines, and that's something that's really important to understand. I'm sure that it's something that you've come to understand as an editor now, because you're switched. Mm-hmm. You've switched sides of the desk. You know, you're no longer submitting. You're going out there and asking for submissions and helping designers be themselves, but still develop a product that serves the theme of the magazine, the nature of the magazine, as well as serve those advertisers that are in it for yarn support. And so how was that process? I mean, how are you finding that dynamic? Has it been challenging, or was it pretty natural for you?
Well, absolutely, it's been challenging. I wouldn't say that it's been challenging to the point where I don't still love it, but it has been challenging to learn the fine balance of trying to keep everyone happy. You know, I want my advertisers to be happy and see their great products displayed beautifully by the designers who have their own vision. I want their readers to be inspired and actually make the items that they see. It's one thing to have it be a lookbook, but I want them to also use it as a functional book that they can use in their lives, the magazine. So it is a balancing act. And deadlines are absolutely a huge part of it, because when I came on board, I learned that there's a whole huge machine of publishing that goes way beyond what I had ever imagined. So, you know, when I pass off the work to the next person, they pass it off to the next person to get the editors and the artists and the layout artists and the photography team and the proofreaders and the copywriters. And it's a big process. So if anybody misses a deadline, it kind of is a domino effect with everybody else. So deadlines are hard and fast. And so, you know, if a project doesn't come in on time, or it isn't right enough on time, it might bumped, or it might get bumped permanently. It might get bumped to a future issue, but I may not be able to make it work. And so that's disappointing. And that's something that I've had to work with designers, because I considered all designers kind of my friends and colleagues all these years. And now I'm in a role where I had to send an email the other day that said, you know, I'm sorry, we missed this particular opportunity. I hope that we can try again another time. But because the project didn't make the deadline, you know, we'll have to try again another time. And that was hard.
Well, it is. And I'm sure that's got to be hard. But the other thing that's got to be hard is, and again, you've been in the industry long enough that you know all these designers personally.
Right.
I'm sure, just like it happens to our editors, that you get something in and realize, no, I don't think that's going to work. And that's got to be a rough conversation for you to have with essentially people that were a year ago your peers.
Right. Right. But I think that's very true. But at the same time, we're professionals, and we know that often a decision to not accept a product, a package, a pattern, isn't always personal. It isn't always because it wasn't a good idea or that it wasn't stitched beautifully, but maybe, you know, something else happened and there are other factors involved. At the submission time, things are often rejected or passed on because we have too many of the same item, or we can't use that particular item at this time. And it's not always personal. And I think most designers know that there's way more factors involved rather than just whether or not I like it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, one would hope that that's the case, because there's so many factors that have to do it. I mean, I have seen wonderful pieces not get included because it just didn't fit the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do
is
you
ran out of room.
Right. I mean, that, you know, printing pages is expensive. I mean, there's a cost analysis you do with these things.
Right.
So, It just is what it is. But I know when you took over, this was, I'm sure, something you sweated. Can you keep everybody on deadline? And so how did you start with finding those people who you wanted to work with with your very first issue?
Well, luckily, because Carol Alexander had established, a wonderful reputation for Crochet Magazine over the last, 10 years or so, we had a lot of designers who already submitted to the magazine. They already submitted to the magazine previously and were already familiar. So I had a nice group of designers already kind of in the wings, ready to send me submissions. But I admit that for my first issue, I did call upon some colleagues who I trusted to have the aesthetic that I was looking for. And I said, "Hey, could you help me out?" And it's funny because the industry, the crochet and knit industry, is so small. We've worked with each other a lot. So designers are not always competitors with one another. But if they have books and they're like, "Hey, can you submit some things for my book? And I'll submit things for yours. And hey, if you write a blog post about my book, I'll write one about yours." So it can be a very congenial, cooperative effort. So I did call upon some people to say, "Hey, can you help me out?" And they came through in, beautiful fashion for my first couple of issues. And that continues to grow as we choose content going forward.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. And I know enough about successful editors, and I know that you're a successful editor, that one of the things that makes it easier is being kind. Letting somebody know that, you still respect them as an artist, but that for whatever reason it doesn't work this time. And it's surprising how kindness and honesty go so very far from the editorial standpoint out, just like, being trustworthy and being able to hit deadlines and being honest about being able to hit deadlines is so valuable in the other direction.
Very much. As a designer, your reputation for being ethical and honest and delivering what you promise is just as important as a beautiful piece. So, as a designer for years, I encountered many design directors and editors, and I could see by their example, that often a little kindness goes a long way. And one quick comment from an editor or a director saying, "Your piece is really lovely," or, "I love the texture," or, "It's really interesting use of stitches," can really make a designer's day and inspire them to do more. And so I learned that especially from Carol Alexander, and I always strive to keep that in mind when I'm conversing in any manner with the people I encounter.
Well, it's so important for a lot of reasons. The first is our industry is, I consider it to be a kind industry. I don't think this industry would tolerate just mean people. I really don't. I think they'd
No.
be run out in a rail. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, along the way, a lot of these designers, well, I mean, frankly, everybody, this is not a what we call a flush industry where everybody's making millions of dollars. It's just not. That's not the way our nobody is, from the yarn
No.
manufacturers. It's not. And we've all gone through a hard time in the last couple of years, and I think we're going to get through it. I think it's going to be fine. I think as long as we can put out good editorial pieces and inspire consumers, everything will work out right. But it's really important when you're dealing at this level, especially with this, economic level, that, you're kind of a decent person about it, because given what designers put into these things, which is so much of their creativity and their heart, they're not Ralph Lauren selling a design. That's not the economic pay scale we're talking about here.
It's hard. I mean, I try and get the most out of my budget I can and allow the designers to get paid the most that I can provide given the structure that I have. And they deserve as much as I can give, if not more. So absolutely, to for us all to thrive, we have to keep encouraging designers to provide their creative vision and keep moving forward, because that's what's going to sell yarn and make the consumers proud of the projects that they make and give to their family and friends.
Well, it's kind of funny. Now that you know, you're in the business of publishing, you probably are more acutely aware than you ever have been before that we're all in the business of selling fiber.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Just the way it works.
Well, you know, it's the media that inspires us to create, and it's part of our day-to-day life. But, you know, I also want to make a fantastic magazine that entertains the readers. And even if they don't make a thing out of the magazine, I hope that they get some leisure time and some satisfaction from seeing the just patterns and carrying on with the industry, even if they don't have time to stitch. But really, ultimately, I hope that the consumer finds a handful of great projects in every magazine, goes out and buys that yarn, creates a satisfying project they're proud of and they can wear or give to loved ones. And that's what keeps it all going. That's why we are here.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a necessary part of that cycle. I think it's, you know, when we all do our job and we put inspirational designs out there, whether it's knit, crochet, weaving, you name it, and people get excited and empowered. I mean, that's one of the things I really, really like about your magazine. And you seem to be moving toward more and more diagrams in your magazine.
Yes.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I am absolutely in love with crochet symbol diagrams. And I've been incorporating them more and more in Crochet Magazine every issue until you know, my pattern services director, you know, we keep trying to get more artists who can do more diagrams. So I've been pushing the limit with each issue, trying to get as much as I can, knowing that I need to balance the number of patterns with the fact that now the symbol diagrams take a little bit more space. So it's going to be a balancing act to provide the best value with the most patterns, with the most complete, both written and symbol instructions, so that we can accommodate people who learn differently, people who read, who speak other languages, people who just like the reassurance of comparing the symbol diagram to the written text to make sure that they're on the right track. All of those things are vitally important and will help people crochet faster and with less frustration when they can use the diagram to help guide them. So I'm a big fan of symbol crochet diagrams, and you'll hear more and more about that through Annie's, not just through the magazine, but through Annie's over the next couple months, because I think that's really the way we need to go to include as many consumers as possible.
Well, I agree. And you're doing a service to everybody because, you know, in my opinion, it's just a superior way to learn and to understand a pattern. And I understand that I may be alone in this, folks, but I feel the same way about, you know, charts and knitting as opposed to in, you know, in pages and pages of, in other words, it's just, I just think that it's an easier way. And if you look at, you know, say Japanese books, it's all symbols of any kind.
Right.
I mean, it's right. This is just the way it is. It's slowly coming to the West, and I think more and more is a good thing.
Yes, I think it's the wave of the future and the way to include everyone so that everyone can crochet faster than ever before. It's just so visual to see the symbol diagram. The diagram doesn't, though, give us the information about gauge and yarn choice, which is where the magazine is a wonderful venue to put both the visual information and the information about specific projects together in one complete package.
I agree. And so again, magazine's looking good. I checked it out
before
we had the interview. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is that I understand that there's some new stuff happening up on the store. On Annie's store.
Yeah.
And I want to give you a chance to tell the Fiber Hooligan listeners about it, because I think it's pretty exciting.
Oh, it's very exciting. Yes. Annie'sCraftStore.com is going to have a new yarn section of the website in mid-November, any day now, that will be more streamlined and easier to navigate than ever before. And people may not know the high quality and diverse yarn that are sold through Annie'sCraftStore.com. And so this will be so much fun for people to be able to shop online, not only for yarn and tools and books, but we have all crafts. So it's paper crafts, it's quilting, it's cross stitch, it's card making, knitting, and crochet. We've got it. It's all there. So the wide variety, and I know that most consumers who craft are multi-crafty. Most of us have dabbled in all the crafts in our lives, and so this is just a really great place to shop for all of it all at once. So that's going to be very exciting.
It is very exciting, and I'm going to encourage Fiber Hooligan listeners to jump up there and see what's up there, because that's really good. But there's another cool thing that's going to be happening. It relates to something that I've had the pleasure of seeing, but maybe a Fiber Hooligan hasn't. I've seen you on TV, but yes, not everybody out there has the same PBS access that I do. And so maybe they've missed you on TV, and you've got some news about that too.
Right. It just started. It's so exciting. The Knit and Crochet Now TV show, which airs on PBS in most markets, but not all of them. So the people who don't have access to watching Knit and Crochet Now on PBS, everyone can now get it on an all-access membership so that you can stream the episodes, all the episodes. We're in season 6. You can stream all the episodes, get all the patterns on any of your viewing devices for, I think right now it's on sale for $24.95 a year. Just a year, $24.95 for the whole year. And you get all the episodes you can watch, that you can watch them over and over again. You get all 225 knit and crochet projects. And you get an all-the-time discount of 10% at annie'scraftstore.com. All that for $24.95. It's just kind of mind-boggling to think of 225 project patterns for $24.95 for the year.
That's a lot of amazing content for what is right, a drop in the bucket. I mean, folks, you know, skip Starbucks twice and you can get, you know, all of this. That's incredible.
And what a great gift.
Oh yeah, I know. So folks, if you're gearing up to give somebody a gift, think about all that television content plus all those projects for. I mean, you look like a hero. You don't have to tell them it was so cheap.
No, you don't. I mean, I love giving gifts where people will be active and do something with it, not just a one-time item. And while I love candy and cupcakes and flowers from my husband, that's a one-time thing that just disappears after the day. But this is a gift that people can use for years. 220, I mean, a one-year membership lasts the full year and you get 225 projects. It's pretty mind-blowing the amount of leisure time fun that a person will get out of that gift.
That's incredible. I mean, you know, extremely, extremely generous from the folks at Annie's. So kudos. So again, Fiber Hooligans, I'm going to encourage you to get up there and see that. And we will try to post a direct link from our Ravelry group so that you can find yourself right there. Well, that's very cool. You guys are just on fire over there, aren't you?
Well, there's a lot of fun brainstorming going on. And I have to say, I wish there was more I was allowed to tell you. But there is more in the pipeline in the coming year that I'm going to be really thrilled to share when the time is right.
Well, so now I just get to corner you and say, well, of course you'll come back on the show and tell us all about it when it's time, right, Ellen?
I would be glad to. Make sure that you pencil me in the spring, and then I'll give you the full scoop.
Well, that's great. That's great. And so I like to do that while they're on the air, because they don't know how to say no to me while you're all listening. So it's been wonderful having you on the show. We're coming down close to the end of the interview here, and last couple of questions I'd like to ask. Do you have any shout-outs that you'd like to make while we're on the air today?
You know, in terms of people that I'm grateful to, I've already mentioned a few really important people, Carol Alexander and Candy Jensen, who both saw potential in me, Kathleen Sams, who saw potential in me. But one exciting new person in my life since I've joined Annie's is Lena Skvagerson. And she is the assistant producer to Candy for the Knit and Crochet Now TV show. And she now also is our in-house Annie's signature collection designer. And it has been so cool to hear her interesting story of being in this industry with, she was at Drops for years and years before she came to Annie's. And I'm really excited to have her be a more prominent face in the industry that people may not have known her before, but she's been here all the time. So Lena Skvagerson is an up and comer that you'll want to keep an eye on.
Oh, that will do just that. That's very gracious of you. All right, so final question. I gave all of my guests fair warning. I gave you fair warning as well. Do you have any final words of wisdom that you'd like to impart to the Fiber Hooligan audience today before we slide on out of here?
Well, it seems to be a theme with me in my life and in my career that you just can't give up. Perseverance is everything. You know, when you hear the stories of, you know, famous authors who were turned down so many times before they hit their best-selling book. And I can't equate myself to that, but the first year of my career, almost 100 rejections, a year worth of no thank you. If I hadn't persevered, I wouldn't be loving life the way I do now. And so my wish is for everyone listening, wherever you are in your life or career, don't give up, because you don't know what the next phone call is going to bring.
Those are good words of advice for anybody in almost anything they want to do that is going to be a passion for them. So great. I really appreciate it. Those are wonderful words of advice. I want to thank you for being so gracious with your time today, and again, for finding the time to reschedule me so that we could get this interview done in time. And it's been wonderful having you on the show.
Thank you, Benjamin. I've really enjoyed it.
So I'm going to wish you a wonderful day and a glorious week, and you take care.
Thank you, Fiber Hooligan fans. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was the delightful Ellen Gormley. You can keep up with what Ellen is doing at crochetmagazine.com/blog. She has her own blog up there, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Okay. You know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Revelry Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. So how are you doing?
It's November.
I know. How did that happen?
I don't know. Can't believe the year is so close to being over with. I've been helping you with this program now, I think, right at about a year.
I think so, too. I mean, we haven't done a show every week, but, you know, this is episode 70. That's a lot of episodes.
Well, there's been some podcasts that have been run for longer, but my being able to come and share with people the cool stuff that we find on the internet's been a relatively short period of time.
Oh, but having you on the show is wonderful. People, come on, people, don't you agree? Isn't Tammy wonderful? Don't you love hearing from Tammy? I want you to like all, I don't know, fire off an email that's to Tammy@fiberhooligan.com, letting her know that you love hearing her segment, folks. That's,
yeah, it's too bad we can't put chocolate in the emails. Okay.
You've got a thing for chocolate, don't you?
A little bit. I was telling somebody the other day that occasionally I get chocolate headaches.
Which means you've had too much, or you haven't had enough?
Haven't had enough, or something, I think. I generally, if I get a headache, I will try everything in the house at least once. And if it doesn't seem to cut the pain, I will move on to the next thing. So over the course of 3 or 4 days, I've tried all the over-the-counter medication in the house I can find. I will put a Hershey Kiss in my mouth and let it just melt, and the headache will disappear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
New and interesting weird facts about Tammy.
Well, interesting. I don't think they're weird. I mean, I would imagine that in our listenership, there might be one or two people that like chocolate as well. I'm just going to throw it out there and say that might be the case.
Just possibly.
And of course, you know me. I don't eat sweets at all. I don't eat chocolate. I don't eat cake. I don't eat anything like that.
You don't eat.
I do eat. I do. I do. I eat. I just don't. I lost my taste for sweets. But again, that's another weird and strange fact about Benjamin. So there, I got you matched. I think it's okay. Far stranger that, you know. But so anyway, anything else cool happened this week for you?
Nope. Just watching the frosting days take the leaves off the trees.
Yeah, I'm looking out my window now and all the leaves are gone. Well, they're not gone. They're just on the ground, which means that raking needs to be done. And I'm trying to avoid it as much as I possibly can. And then trying to
good luck with that.
I'm trying to convince my boys that it would be good for them to go rake.
It's a load of fun.
It's a load of fun. Yes. I somehow can't get the Tom Sawyer thing going on, but we won't get into my leave problem, folks, you know. So, you know me, I always look forward to your report. Last week you had a part A, this week you said you have a part B, and so let's get on to your part B.
Well, last week we talked about the knitting craft it helps us be healthier. Today, this is about another article about knitting is trendy. It came from, looks like the UK, this article, and it specifically highlighted different art installations. It starts off with a J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy wall hanging. And you've probably seen the art installations appearing everywhere, not just like yarn bombing, but there's glass work that depicts knitting being done in motion. This article estimates that there are 7.2 million knitters in Britain in 2013, according to the UK Hand Knitting Association, endorsed by celebrity knitting enthusiasts like Sarah Jessica Parker and the star from Mad Men, Christina Hendricks. Sewing's also helped, but for some reason, the younger people seem to be really latching on to wonderfully unique designs. We're getting away from the classics and knitting. They show a young lady in a fox helmet. It looks like a fox in the hat. You know, then it gets into extremes, like extremely large needles, like size 50s. It's just mass attendance at these knitting events. We see a lot of people at the Stitches events, but apparently that's really surprising in the UK for such a considered ancient craft.
Well, you know, I know about a few of the shows, but there are shows over there that are a mixture of things, and they're not quite the same as a Vogue Live or a Stitches. And I'm not saying that they should. Different people deal with things different ways. So when I say a show, I don't want people to equate it as, you know, they have their own version of Stitches. They have other things that promote all kinds of fiber arts as well, like Ali Pali. You know, it's pretty obvious from reading online that this is getting, I don't know if it's any bigger than it ever was, but it certainly is getting a lot more media attention in the UK.
I think it's an art form too. It's being seen as more than just, you know, your grandma's jumper. Isn't that how they call them, sweaters over there? Jumpers?
Jumpers? I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
The Christmas jumper.
The Christmas jumper. Okay. See, you know, again, is a jumper is always what I was, you know, we used to put the little kids in jumpers. So I think of a jumper as something else, but, you know.
Me too.
But I, you know, I'm having, you know, talked with folks like Jenny King, I understand that we all do have different ways of saying certain things. So, yeah, okay. Well, that's cool. But, you know, it's funny. I did see that article you were talking about.
Yes.
Yes, and it's pretty cool. And there were some really kind of interesting pictures in that article, too. So I hope you'll post the link up there. And Fiber Hooligans, I'm going to encourage you to check it out because it was interesting. You know, not from a fashion knitting standpoint, but from an art standpoint.
The article starts off with a young gentleman with a knitting tattoo. We've seen some knitting tattoos. Have you got yours yet?
No. You know, the coolest thing that I think that ever happened for tattoos is we have this wonderful graphic artist named Natalie, who you probably haven't met, but she does all of the layout and the artistry and a lot of the logos and the drawings that you see for Stitches in the books and the magazine. And, you know, so if you see like a cool cartoon or something like that, oftentimes, or a sketch or, you know, some really cool layout, oftentimes that's Natalie. Natalie designed a sheep pin for us that we, that I think it was a cloisonné pin that we brought to Stitches West probably 6 or 7 years ago. And one of our attendees liked it so much that she went out and got that pattern tattooed on her, which I thought was pretty cool. I've told the staff that anytime that they want to get an XRX logo tattooed, I'll pay for it. But so far, nobody's taken me up on it. In fact, they said you first. And what you need to know about me is I am never going to get a tattoo. I'm just never going to get a tattoo.
Well, I've been tempted myself a couple of times. I have a birthmark that I would like to tattoo over.
You know, the gentleman in me is not going to ask where it is. Okay.
It's on my bicep because it's a strawberry mark. People think it's a hickey.
Ah.
So I would rather people see a tattoo than a hickey.
Okay. What would you get tattooed?
I don't know. It's pretty small. I'm still deciding.
Okay. Well, it's perfectly fine. So you got anything else for us?
Nope. Just, did you know that we were trendy? Isn't that awesome?
Well, you're trendy and stylish. I mean, I'm just the guy that talks to you. You know, you've always been trendy.
I think I'm more trendy online. It's amazing when you meet somebody how much taller they are than you thought they were online.
Well, and I don't consider you like a short person. You know, I mean, maybe you do, but I don't think you're a short person.
I think people are surprised to meet me and find out how much of a grandma I actually am.
You totally don't come across as a grandma. Okay. We're not going to let Tammy beat up on herself. She's hip and she's in the now, folks. You know, we could all be as lucky to be as hip as Tammy is. So that I'm just
Tammy
saying.
Is happy and spreading it around.
Tammy is happy and happening is what I'm saying.
There you go. Oh, Tammy, hey.
Happy and happening. Okay, well, great. Well, so another great segment, Tammy. And, you know, I love listening to the stuff you bring on. It's always great stuff. And so we'll look forward to hearing from you next week. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. Next week, my guest will be Kyle Kanucky. Kyle is an extremely talented knitwear designer, and more importantly, Kyle is just a very cool guy. He divides his time between working in HIV/AIDS prevention, designing knitwear patterns, and exploring the fiber arts. Kyle has a lot of good stuff to say, and so I'm going to invite you to join us next week on the show so you can hear more about this fascinating man. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and All Free Crochet for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guest, Ellen Gormley, for being so gracious with her time and being so delightful on today's show. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.